but I have my thing up, and we can check out the thing. What was that? What's that noise?
What, the noise Christy made?
Yeah.
I'm playing a game.
She was drinking and watching hockey before this, so watch out.
She's one of those nights. Watch out.
Hello and welcome to The Greaties, the great 80s movie debate, where we see if the movies of the 1980s still hold up today. If you're a child of the 80s, a fan of classic films, or just a movie geek, you've come to the right place. The focus of today's podcast is 1981's The Road Warrior, directed by George Miller and starring Mel Gibson. My name is Dave. Our illustrious panel of 80s experts includes Christy.
Words, just words.
Matt.
To do this podcast, I'll need 5 gallons of diesel, some high-octane gasoline, and the Energizer. Oi!
And Chris.
Okay.
Well, we like to start every show by having each panelist reflect on their past experience with the movie we're discussing so we can see where everyone's coming from. So, Christy, what is your history with The Road Warrior?
I never saw this damn movie.
God.
I never, ever saw this movie. I think I may have seen a televised version of it because I remember the guy in the flying machine. Like when it was on, like, USA or something. But that's it.
What about you, Matt?
Oh, I wasn't sure. Last podcast, I said I wasn't sure if I'd actually seen this. I definitely saw this because I remembered a lot of it. Don't remember what circumstance. Probably a rental a couple years after it was out because I don't think I saw it in theaters. So I'd say probably, this is what, 81 it came out?
Yes.
I probably saw it like mid-80s then when it was finally on video.
Yeah, I put myself in the same category as that because I think it's the weird thing about it is I had seen Weird Science before I saw this, and the actor Vernon Wells, who plays Wes, the henchman of the gang, plays a similar character in Weird Science. And when I saw The Road Warrior after it, I was like, "Hey, that's the guy from Weird Science." So I kind of saw that out of order, but I'm most interested in what Chris has to say because. We had a panelist pick. It was his turn to pick a movie. And of all the movies in the 1980s to choose from, you picked this. Why?
Love it. For those of you who heard last podcast, Fatal Attraction, my mother took me to see The Road Warrior because I remember coming out of the old AMC theater of her saying, "Watch out for that guy. He's going to be a star."
So your mother predicted the stardom of Mel Gibson.
The stardom, yes.
From this movie.
That's what she said. I was there.
Okay.
I was 8.
And I guess it's important to note that you are maybe the biggest Mel Gibson fan on the planet Earth. So
yes.
You're a little bit biased in everything you're about to say.
This is going to be a long podcast.
And why is that?
Because the three of you idiots are going to be talking smack about Mel Gibson, about his real life.
My father just walked into the podcast?
Smack.
Three of you idiots are talking.
Mel Gibson and smack. Wow.
Whoa.
Oh. Chris, you make me want to smoke.
I guess I shut up, you whore, but I won't.
Why do you always seem to get attached to the scumbags?
Who else? Who
Michael is Jackson.
There's no proof. Go on.
And this character.
Whatever. It's a fucking
That's a compelling argument, Chris.
Whatever.
Forgetting the phone call and the wife. What about
the whole Jews thing?
Yes, and the drunk driving.
Do you have your own opinions? That's an opinion. That's
wow.
Okay. You don't have to agree with them.
Okay.
That's it.
You got me.
That's all I can say.
That's hard to argue, but it's not a very good argument on Chris's side either.
But you're able to separate, even whether you think he's a good guy or not, you're able to separate.
I think he's made some great movies in the past.
Yes.
And some colossal mistakes in the recent.
Correct. But I'll be first in line to see The Beaver.
The what?
His new movie.
Oh, okay.
You can't just not tell Matt now what the movie's about. You have to
gotta go watch the trailer.
Nice Beaver.
Basically, it's him. He's like divorced dad, and the only way he can communicate through the world is through a beaver puppet that he carries around and talks through.
Yes. That does look pretty darn good.
Yeah, so art's starting to imitate life, apparently.
Made by Jodie Foster.
Right.
Oh, that just keeps getting better.
Oh.
Is James
produced
Garner,
by Lucasfilm, I hope.
Is James Garner moving the scenery so it can be a whole Maverick reunion?
Sure.
Why not?
All right, well, we'll probably get back to Mel.
I'm sure that name will come up once or twice in this.
But I did not know that this movie is only actually called The Road Warrior in the U.S.
I did read that, and my copy just had, when it came on, Mad Max 2. There was no Road Warrior.
Oh, really?
Logo.
Ours said just Road Warrior. There's no mention of Mad Max in the title anywhere.
Yeah. Mine only said Road Warrior 2. Now, you have the relatively new Blu-ray copy.
I do.
Which is now out of print, you said.
Yeah.
And it was listed on the title screen as Mad Max 2.
That's all came up. Mad Max, the big 2 to the right.
Hmm.
That was it.
That's interesting. Because the reason that I saw for that was that Mad Max was really, really not widely released in the U.S., so they figured calling something Mad Max 2 would be confusing to an American audience.
Yeah.
That opening sequence wasn't confusing enough.
Yeah.
That was weird. Yeah.
Oh, geez, the opening sequence could have been the movie.
When it blacked out, I was like, that wasn't too bad of a movie. I'm like, oh, wait, there's more?
It was very confusing. I mean, Christy, I'm glad that you had never seen it before. Were you confused by the flashback and the voiceover of what had happened to cause the earth to be the way it is?
Yes. I didn't understand how everything got... It was like old news footage,
mm-hmm.
and it just didn't make sense. It was just like, all this stuff happened. Then the Road Warrior was on the road. Okay, well, that's great.
It was confusing, and like you said, it was like old newsreels, and some of them seemed to be like from World War II.
Yeah, yeah, it's like it went straight from World War II to apocalypse.
Yeah. It was kind of strange, and as soon as I heard the voiceover, I mean, one of my pet peeves is if there's a voiceover at the beginning, there damn well better be one at the end. So, I mean, we can leave that for the end when we discuss that, but as soon as I heard that, I forgot about this whole beginning, and I was like, I thought this was about people chasing each other in the desert. It is very unclear what has happened. They talk about two mighty warrior tribes.
Yes.
Where are the tribes?
And ultimately, you didn't even need to know that to sit and understand and possibly enjoy this movie.
I think it's possibly supposed to be post-nuclear. Is it?
I don't think so. I think it's post gasoline. It just made it. Well, it just made it sound like.
I think it's post cereal.
They got into a major war, but I don't know.
Makes you wonder how the first one like explained shit, which I forget. It's been a while.
There are a few clips from the first Mad Max in that opening newsreel.
I don't think there was no end of the world in the first one. It was just a certain time that was going on.
Right. And we talked about the first one and how gut-wrenchingly boring Mad Max is.
I hate the first one.
I'm not sure I even ever saw that now. Now seeing this, I remembered a lot of this movie, so I'm not sure I did ever see the first Mad Max.
Although in the first one, it's something that happens in a lot of Mel Gibson films where his wife or his kid die. It's one of his trademark things.
The running theme.
Yeah.
Oh, really? That's like his I'll Be Back?
Yeah, it is actually.
Huh.
He's always alone.
Yeah. The carryovers, I guess the only carryovers from Mad Max are his car.
Yeah.
And I don't know anything about cars, but if you do any research on this, it's all about the car. It's some kind of supercharged V8. I have no idea what that means.
Yeah, me either.
Klingon, and I wouldn't understand it. And his dog.
Yes.
Which is only called Dog, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Best character of the movie.
Yep.
I love it.
I actually like the fact that a lot of the characters didn't have names. Like, the dog was called Dog. The gyro captain, his name was the gyro captain. The feral kid is the feral kid. They get such a bleak future, they don't even care enough to give people names.
Nope.
Nothing
to memorize.
Yeah, that's true. Did you guys have any problems with the accents at all?
No. In fact, now Mel Gibson is Australian, right?
Yes.
And I thought, yeah. He was born here, but he was
in New York, but moved at age 12 or something.
Something like that.
Okay, that actually might answer my question a little more. Because we, of course, all know these, you know, phone calls that he made recently, and he doesn't have an Australian accent in those. So I was like, did he lose it over time? But I guess he's probably can flip a switch almost if he...
I think he lost it over time. I mean, even in the movies later on in life. He's not as thick. It's not as thick as...
Well, I didn't realize he moved when he was 12, so that probably made it a lot easier, too, to go back and forth. Okay, well, that answered my question right off the bat, I think, so... Never mind.
Supposedly, there is... Now, and I pointed this out to Matt and Christy before we started recording. Chris chose this movie, did not have his own copy of the movie.
I had it on VHS.
But he refuses to watch it on VHS.
I do. I did.
So... get a copy of the movie for him. And the lady at the store pointed out to me that this may be the dubbed version. Apparently there's a dubbed version where they redub all the voices because they thought that Americans were too stupid to understand Australian accents.
That's awesome.
I know they did that for the first one, Mad Max. I don't think it was his voice. Mel's voice.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. The Road Warrior, I had never heard that before.
I seem to recall that they did dub over his voice in the first one.
The copy I saw of The Road Warrior was not dubbed. It was...
No, this is not...
...10-year-old DVD version. So none of us saw a dubbed version.
Nope. Yeah. Thank God.
Yeah, that would be so annoying.
That would have just ruined the whole experience.
Because it was such a...
Because this movie is flawless.
Yeah.
Well, you get right into the first chase scene, and this film is known, I think, mostly for its action and specifically its chase scenes.
Well, it has to be because I think there's maybe 100 words spoken in the whole 2 hours of the movie. That's between true. Every character.
I looked online and Mel Gibson only has 19 lines of dialogue.
I think this is like, I think for a movie, like this movie just opening up in a chase scene and you're like 8, 9, 10 years old, it's fucking awesome.
Especially when you're with your mother.
Especially.
Well, okay, this is the this we already alluded to this to each other before we started recording. Why is everyone dressed in S&M outfits?
What you do?
And apparently the future is very homoerotic.
Well, homoerotic?
Homo. Oh,
people are really, really excited to see Homer Simpson.
Yeah, that too. That's what I'd say if I was wearing assless chaps on a hot desert day.
It's hot, man. No. It's a sweat.
Well, you're referring to Wes, played by Vernon Wells. He's the mohawked henchman of the gang. And he's the guy that I referred to when I said I saw Weird Science first. He wears the same costume almost exactly in Weird Science. And there's a bunch of other guys. I mean, the one guy is a cop-looking guy. He looks like the Gimp from Pulp Fiction.
Hell yeah.
He's like the alternate village people. We interrupt the Gradys with some special bonus content. We were able to ask Vernon Wells himself how he came to play the role of Lord General in Weird Science. He said, quote, "My people were approached by Joel Silver to do the role. The rest, as they say, is history," end quote. Thank you, Vernon. You can catch Vernon in the action-adventure web series Western X. Go to westernxtheshow.com for details. Also, look for him in the upcoming sci-fi film The Pod. We now return you to our regular programming, already in progress.
I mean, what the hell happens in the future?
That'll be the only clothes that survive the wear and tears of the post-apocalyptic world.
It's just leather and assless chaps.
Leather straps and assless chaps.
Mm. And the other thing that makes it worse is Wes has this teenage boy. I think he's called like the Golden Boy or something.
His slave.
He was pretty.
What's going on there?
A sex slave.
I ask you. You picked this movie. What did you make us watch?
I never even heard of that. I watch it for the cars.
You're a big car fan, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Did you know that was a V8?
Of course.
Should have had a V8.
I'm still going to ask Kelly if you have assless chaps in your
pants. I'm wearing them now.
Oh, okay.
I think when you're young, you're not even thinking that. I hope not, anyway.
No, I think that was one thing that I noticed more in this.
Yeah, the older you get, I mean, there were some Yes.
Max's costume, I think, makes sense. It's pretty much his... he was like a state trooper kind of guy, right? Whatever they have in Australia. Yeah. And it's really his jacket and stuff from the first movie, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And I guess they said that he sustained injuries in the first movie, and they're consistent in his costume in this movie.
I did he got his arm run over in the first one.
And he wears some kind of leg brace.
Yeah, yes. He got really fucked up in the first one.
All right. I get, and you like Vernon Wells from Commando.
Yeah, I do. I actually met him, Vernon Wells. Yeah. I got a story about that later.
Later?
Oh, wait.
What is this, like, After Dark podcast? After Dark? I'll tell you about it later.
Could say that.
Get cozy.
Get cozy. Get some Cavassier. And we'll talk about Vernon Wells later.
Well, there's a cool chase scene. There's a crash. And you get to see then just how precious a commodity gas is as he... You know, there's a gas spill, and Max is getting stuff to catch the gas. He's sponging it up from the concrete with a rag.
Yeah.
And this sets up, you know, how important gas will be throughout the movie. And I guess any good movie like this, we call dystopic movies, like an end of the world kind of altered future movie. Any movie like that has a social commentary. Did you get the sense there was some kind of social commentary going on with the times, the late 70s? There was a gas crisis in our country. Did that ever get through to anybody?
No.
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 Okay. Because, I don't know, that's one of the things I started to think of. Like, why is it gas? I mean, I kept writing down, for a world short on gas, why are they driving everywhere?
That's a good question.
That is a good question. Didn't even think of that.
They do a hell of a lot of driving.
Yes, they do.
And, it shows their power.
Okay.
Ooh.
I never thought about that. And it's not even just the driving. They do a lot of idling.
Yeah, turn the car off.
And and revving, you know, like revving the engine.
The revving was, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you would think in a world short of gas, you would use it pretty sparingly.
You would put it in neutral and have a coast.
Yeah, but it's them showing off.
Yeah.
It's them saying, I'm going to take you. Look, I can even waste this gas.
Hmm. Good point.
Mm.
Once again.
Once again.
From the
three glasses in.
Three glasses of wine in, and she's still the most coherent. But you also get to meet shortly after the autogyro captain, played by Bruce Spence, and his little one-man whirly bird. And he tells Max about this refinery nearby. You've met Bruce Spence as well, haven't you? Because he is in episode 3. I know Matt knows all about this.
Actually, yeah, I did recognize him from that, because he was also in Farscape.
Oh, okay.
So he's been in a few things I like. He was, I remember his character well from Revenge of the Sith, because he was like in every promotional thing for that movie leading up to it, and then he was like in it for what, 3 seconds?
Yep.
Yeah.
Was he and Virginia Hay both on Farscape?
Yep, Virginia Hay was one of the lead characters in Farscape.
Mm. Paul Zota Zan.
Yep.
Yep.
Bless you.
Kristen has her action figure.
You're absolutely right about that character. I wrote the name down. I didn't know the guy's name. It's Tion Midon or something like that. He was in every stinking trailer for episode 3, and he was in it for 30 seconds.
And he would smile.
It was a cool costume.
Yeah, it was.
But really pointless. And
it was a pointless character. General Grievous is not here. General Grievous is upstairs. Okay, gotta go.
That's funny. You didn't meet him?
I thought
I thought you and Tim...
Could be wrong.
Made a Bruce Spence pilgrimage.
Because I would like to meet him. You know, he's in Star Wars Rogue War.
Mm, okay.
And Nemo.
Yes, he's one of
the... That's right. Yeah, I read that on his IMDb page.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, my other question after this scene was, how does Max not know about this refinery? Without much gas, it can't be that far of a drive. And if it's a barren wasteland, you'd think how could you not see a refinery sticking up out of the middle of the desert? How does he not know about it?
Because it's a big land, a lot of miles of travel.
It said it's like 3 miles.
Well, he was probably came from 80 miles away.
He was coming from the other direction, Dave.
Duh.
Okay. I don't think so, but okay.
It's not one little block.
All right.
Australia is huge, Dave.
It is, I guess.
Look at a map.
It's not as dry as it was in this movie right now, but it's pretty big.
Too soon?
Yes.
Sorry.
Well, and he also shortly after that, see the true leader of the gang, who is Lord Humongous.
He wasn't that big.
Well, sometimes you gotta give yourself a bigger name to make you feel bad.
He was played by some Swedish weightlifter. Have you met him, Chris?
Was that makeup on his head, or was that how his head looks?
I'd assume that was makeup.
I had a question about that, because he has like this disfigured face, and he wears a hockey mask, which is really pre-Jason.
Yeah.
Which, kind of a ripoff. I mean, if you ask me, Sean Cunningham in Friday the 13th, this is before Jason wore the hockey mask in any Friday the 13th movie. But there's no real backstory on this guy. Why is he disfigured?
I have no idea.
I would love to know. I mean, they could have mentioned that in
prequel.
Some of the...
I was going to say, I smell a prequel coming up.
I don't think they really cared about details too much in these Australian films.
I guess not. I mean, they showed us the goofy newsreel at the beginning. A little more about what we were about to see would have been helpful, because I'd like to know why the guy's...
Yeah.
He seems like he's...
Never know what the hell happened to him.
No.
Maybe we should write the prequel. We can call it Pleasant Max. It's when everything was good before his life turned to shit. He was a happy gentleman, and then he went mad.
Well, Max and the gyro captain sit and observe for what seems for a couple of days at the refinery on how to get in, and Max has some dog food. And
yep. That's where Mel began to eat all of his dog food in all of his movies.
Notice he eats dog biscuits.
And Lethal Weapons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know why? He's just mad.
It's another,
he's crazy.
Another Mel Gibson theme. Wife dies and eats dog food.
Eats dog food, yeah.
Well, there's a chase, and there are non-gang members living inside the settlement in the refinery that are trying to escape. And there's this real brutal rape and murder scene.
Yeah.
That was a really brutal scene.
Yeah. I didn't remember any of this.
I remember, I mean, watching it now, I had to have seen it back when I was 8, and God knows how I fucking thought during that moment.
Did you ask your mom about that?
Twice.
You thought the guy was trying to do the worm. It was the breakdance revolution.
Are those movies? Yeah, that was a really nasty scene to watch.
Yeah. But pretty compelling. I mean, pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And pretty, I mean, honestly, if we were in like a post-apocalyptic.
That's it. You're cut off.
I have another one.
If we were post honestly, the Olympics and, oh, wait, huh? So what?
No, but I mean, that's really, that is the most brutal of all the murders and everything else that happens. That's the most violent scene to me.
I don't know. That guy getting into heaven with a boomerang is pretty awesome.
That was just cool.
Cool.
Well, you're talking at this point then about the feral kid.
Newt.
Yeah, it was like Newt's brother.
Garrett was, man.
Newt and Nat.
Yep.
And he has his boomerang that only he can catch.
Yeah.
What does he have, some kind of glove?
I never noticed.
Yeah, he's got a metal glove.
He does?
Right.
Yep.
And the leader of the settlers is Papa Gallo. And they're all in white. It's anything but subtle.
Right. Yeah.
I was confused by the feral kid, because he's like in and out of the compound. Is he really feral? Like at one point he's being hugged by one of the women. He just creeped me out. What was the little guy in Land of the Lost?
Chaka. That's what I said. I said that during the film. I said, that kid looks like Chaka.
That's exactly what he looked like.
He did. I never thought of that.
But he was cool. I mean,
his teeth were too big for his face.
Yeah.
That's how those Australians look over there.
Well, he kills the Wes's boy toy. That's the guy that gets killed with the boomerang, which was really cool.
That was awesome.
And Wes goes nuts, and Humongous puts him in his sleeper hold.
Yeah, that was like...
We've all lost somebody we love.
I thought it was like Jack Bauer. Like, don't fight it. Don't fight it.
And Humongous gives them one day, the refiners, one day to walk away from the refinery.
And the montage of him talking.
Oh, God, yeah.
And him, like, pointing here, pointing there.
Yeah. but like you said, there isn't much of a story in this.
No, no, no.
Gibson, 19 lines of dialogue. What did you think of him in his portrayal? He was very cool, but this is not, to me, what makes him great. The thing that makes him great is his sense of humor, and there is nothing like that in this.
Oh, God, no. No.
But he really just was so fucking cool. I mean, I love it.
Okay. Well, he really comes to, you know, like an agreement with the settlers that he'll get them the rig to get, they want to leave the refinery, to get the rig to transport the gas out. And, you know, he gets the rig and he pulls a Han Solo, you know, he's going to take what he was promised and leave. But, no, he grows a conscience, I guess. Is that basically?
I never understood why he came back home.
Because he realizes he can't leave alive. His car is gone. His dog is gone. He doesn't have a choice. But that's why when they say, "You're really going to do that?" and he's like, "I have no choice." He's not going to leave there alive unless he drives that rig.
They kill the dog.
That's
up his car. And the gyro captain saves him. Yeah, you're right, Chrissy. He has to drive the truck at that point. Yeah.
Or they're going to slaughter him.
Right.
Although, who would let him drive the truck? Because he's already proven not to be a very good driver twice so far in this kind of movie.
He's better than anybody else, though.
Especially Papa Gallo.
Yeah.
Papa Gallo. Well, that's a guy's name. I didn't make up the damn name.
Sounds like a brand of shoes.
Well, all this sets up really one of the most memorable chase scenes and action sequences of the decade.
I think I read it was like 13 minutes at the end.
Is that what it is? Yeah. You timed it out? Look at you.
No, I did some research.
Oh, okay.
Well, look at him for doing research, too.
Best stunt drivers ever.
Well, does this, just the end sequence alone, does this hold up to you based on today's stunts and things that can be done with special effects? Zero special effects. This is like really happening stunts.
I think
stunts.
It's guaranteed fantastic to watch because it's all real. No cables, no wires.
That's what I loved about it is that there wasn't any, you know, CGI cars and trucks and whatnot. All that was what really happened.
I actually think, though, there was a few scenes, and maybe it's me, that I think it's the old, Matt probably knows this, the old Steven Seagal later on in the scenes.
They were definitely sped up.
Yeah, when they fast forward the whole scene, so it was like they're going real fast.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, there weren't enough to, like, it wasn't the whole scene, but there was definitely a couple.
It's one of the best realistic, I mean, just nonstop real cars going, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, the editing was great. The stunts, amazing. The music was great. We talked about the music. This is composed by Brian May, not the guy from Queen.
That's what Christy said when she got the credits.
Oh, okay.
The guy from Queen?
I always thought it was the guy from Queen, but it's not. It's a different guy. And I kind of thought it was a guy from Queen because, like, some of these rock guys will compose, like Stuart Copeland from The Police, composes film scores. And I thought that's what this guy. No, I looked it up. It's not the same guy. It's a different guy. He actually has passed away.
Oh. Wow.
And he's done a lot of bad movies, but, you know, Hollywood movies, but nothing like too great. So, but the music in this, I think, is great, especially in that scene.
Agreed.
I didn't actually notice the music in that scene because the scene was, like we were all saying, really shot well. But I guess maybe it's good it didn't stand out as being inappropriate. Maybe that's a good compliment I could give it.
I see what you mean. It didn't take away from it.
Right. Yep.
And George Miller, the director, has had a bizarre career. I mean, he did these movies and Babe.
The pig movie? I never knew that.
And Happy Feet.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
One extreme to the next.
Strange.
Girls getting raped in cars and then...
And Babe.
And then a pig.
And a pig.
Yeah.
You did good, pig.
That'll do, Max.
That'll do, pig.
He did do the Twilight Zone movie, the John Lithgow gremlin on the wing of the plane.
Oh, okay.
The Twilight Zone, the movie. He directed that portion.
Oh, okay.
So, but it kind of a strange career.
That is odd, yeah.
Is odd.
Now, there is a possible sequel that's been in talks for a while.
Forever, yeah.
What do you know about this?
Nothing, really. It's been going on forever.
Because he's attached to it, George Miller.
He's still alive?
Yeah. Mad Max Fury Road has been the working title for a while, and you told me this was at least a year ago now. That
it was a while ago.
Mel Gibson was seriously in talks to reprise the role.
I think that's before any of his shit happened. His sugar tits.
What would that be?
Sugar tits. A few phone calls.
A few phone calls. Nothing major.
And the Jews.
They'll probably put Jason Statham in now instead or something.
I would watch that.
The guy from Justified. Timothy Olyphant.
Oh, I would watch that.
That guy's awesome.
I don't know who likes him more. You or Christy?
I know.
That show is really cool, though.
Do you picture him in assless chaps?
Right now.
I don't want to see him in assless chaps.
No?
No, he's just a good... That show is a really good fit for him. That and Deadwood. He was on Deadwood as well.
Was amazing. Yeah.
He's just good. That good, solid... You don't know where his brain is going, character.
Yeah, we both like him a lot. He's good in everything.
He's cool.
Well, this truck, the chase ends with a head-on crash with Lord Humongous.
And when?
That sounds like George Lucas named him.
Name him George Humongous. Lord Humongous.
I love.
Paint me like Papa Smurf.
I love his little circus barker that would introduce him, and he had all the nicknames for him. He was the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla. That was great. But it turns out that the tanker was a decoy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sand in it the whole time.
Fuckers.
Now, did Max know this?
I don't think he did.
I don't think he did from the last shot of him at the tanker.
Holding the sand in his hand.
Yeah.
He's got like kind of a smile on his face.
How the hell did that shotgun shell stay on the front of the truck going 60 miles an hour?
You know, since you brought that up.
All that time.
That kid, Chaka, whatever the hell his name was, the feral kid, he was like, you know, like swinging and jumping from, you know, spots on the truck all over the place, like no danger. Then when he asked him to crawl up on the hood, which is probably the safest thing he's done in that truck, the kid was like hesitant to do it. It was really weird.
It's like, you know what's weird is like this has been one of my favorite scenes when Mel leans out while he's driving a big rig with a shotgun and blows the kid the kid away. And then there's just a scene where he grabs a kid with like one arm,
yeah, that was pretty cool.
Throws him over to the seat. Love that part.
That's
my
dog.
My kids. While I'm driving. That's like one of the best scenes I think in movie history.
I think that's always on the Oscars, you know, best scenes list when they do them every year. That shot of him picking the kid up with one arm.
No, the whole shotgun.
Oh, okay.
That was so cool.
Well, so we all agree Max did not know.
I don't think he did.
Decoy.
Not at all.
All right, because the others had gone the other way in a school bus.
Where are they going?
They're going to
north.
It just said they, you know, they're going to join some northern tribe.
Toward the
ocean.
Who
knows?
They're going to Thunderdome, dude. Come on.
Yeah. They're going beyond Thunderdome.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Well, they're in the epilogue, the voiceover is back, so I was very happy about that.
Meanwhile.
Yeah. They're going to the north. The gyro captain becomes the new leader of the gang because Papa Gaio.
Who?
Papa Smurf.
Got a trident in the back.
Yeah, he got killed in the chase.
Oh, I got a problem with that scene, too. Let's talk about that quick. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of cool that he threw a trident at him and killed him. But then when they cut to him driving off the road, it was like, there is no way he could have hit him in the back in that car.
You're exactly right. He was sitting in the car behind him.
Right, yeah.
You're exactly right.
I killed a guy with a trident.
Well, the gas is going the other way on the bus with everybody, and they seem to be singing like campfire songs or something. And it turns out that the voiceover is the feral kid.
I was shocked.
Who has become very well-spoken. And who in turn becomes the chief of what they call, quote, the Great Northern Tribe. And that was the last we ever saw of the Road Warrior. And I guess until Tina Turner.
Great.
Was not a big fan of that one either.
We don't need another hero.
We don't.
Well, what is that about?
It's been a while.
You don't remember?
Yeah.
I think it's about the
That was like Gladiator type thing, wasn't it?
It had a gladiator thing, but then they were working. They were enslaved by Tina Turner.
Temple of Doom and Gladiator kind of mixed.
It's like Tron.
Only better.
Well, and Peter Pan.
What?
No, because the kids, he got rescued by like a group of feral kids.
So Neverland Ranch becomes Thunderdome in the future? Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Well, that'd be some fun. Michael Jackson and Mel Gibson in the same place.
Chris would fall over.
I would. Do what you want with me. I'm all yours.
Chris would be like, I wish I was a Russian boy / or a little boy / Russian female dancer.
this is what people would assume is the movie that made Mel Gibson a star, but I don't think it did, because I wrote down like the 1, 2, 3, 4, the 6 movies he made after this, and they're all total crap. Attack Force Z.
I haven't.
Now, Mrs. Sofell.
I own all these on VHS.
Year of Living Dangerously. Oh, my
God. Oh, God.
But didn't that win an Oscar like for her, for the little girl?
For Linda Hunt.
Okay.
She wasn't a little girl. She was like in her 40s.
She's a little person.
But she was so tiny, though.
Well, she's a little person. Yeah. What are you getting at?
Nothing. She's a little person, I said. Little girl.
The Bounty.
Never saw it.
You own all these movies. That's the thing. He had to be a Mel Gibson completist.
I have
in all
every
all these,
movie of his.
But he hasn't seen them. He buys them and sticks them away like a relic on a shelf. But won't watch them.
I think I watched The Bounty a long time ago.
The River.
God.
Mrs. Sofell.
Oh, God. Yep. That one keeps popping up on a randomizer and we keep skipping it.
And then Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pieces of crap.
But Road Warrior, I think, gave him all those crappy roles.
Well, I'm not even saying they're crappy movies, but they're... This is supposed to be the movie that made him a star. None of those movies were
They're not
popular.
Smash hits, no.
And then 1987, Lethal Weapon.
Bam.
So 6 movies between this and Lethal Weapon.
Where was Tequila Sunrise in the midst of all this?
That was after Lethal Weapon.
After, okay.
That was like 88.
Okay.
I think these movies showed his acting range, maybe.
He said 19 words.
No, in the next 6 movies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't mean Road Warrior.
Yeah, I guess you could say he cut his chops on these other movies before he became somebody else. Because he acted with a lot of, I mean, like Anthony Hopkins is in The Bounty and Sissy Spacek and The River. And, you know, he got to act with a lot of great actors and actresses. So maybe, you know, this is where he learned how to be an actor. But I don't think he was a star until Lethal Weapon.
That's really what made him skyrocket, yes.
So, well... I think unless anybody else has anything to add, I think we're ready for our reviews. We will review it in our initial viewing, which for Christy, this is the initial viewing, versus our 2011 viewing of The Road Warrior. So Christy will have only one. Christy, let's hear your review of The Road Warrior.
As Matt can attest, I spent multiple times yelling at the TV going, "What are you doing? Why are you going over there?" I don't like lonely movies, as I like to call them.
Post-Olympic movies.
Apocalyptic. I'd have to give it a 2.
What do you think about that, Chris?
Nope.
All right, well, let's
It's still better than the Tron review you gave, so.
Yeah.
Do you know why? It's a better movie.
Ooh.
No, it isn't.
Well, let's hear what Matt has.
I give it the cost of gas in 1950, a shiny dime.
That's fucking awesome. Awesome. That's awesome.
I don't remember when I saw it or, you know, in what capacity, so I'm going to give it a 3 because I had to have rented it and I watched it all the way through. This time I could have done without pretty much the middle part, and I'll give it a 2, and 1 star for the opening chase scene and 1 for the ending chase scene.
Chris, this isn't sounding too good.
No.
Well, I'll go next, and we'll leave Chris for last since this was his panelist pick.
5-5.
I did not see this until after Weird Science, like I said. So I probably saw this actually in college, I'd say early 90s, and liked it a lot. And for all the reasons that we said, mostly because of the chase scenes and stuff like that. I am not a stunt guy. I don't watch special features about how they did stunts. I don't give a crap. But this one always sticks out to me as being one of the better ones. So in an initial viewing in the early 90s, I would have given this a 3 out of 5. And watching it the other day, it held up for me. I still found the story kind of lame and was still very confused by the backstory, the little that they give you. But the chase scenes in this are still legendary. And I'm going to stick with my 3 out of 5. It definitely holds up for me. All right, Chris. Let's hear it. This is your pick.
Well, when my mother took me by the hand and we went to see this at the AMC theater, you know, I was an 8-year-old boy, so I don't know what I was seeing. Maybe the cars and the crashes. I gave it 2.5 back in 81. But now, since I'm a true diehard Mel Gibson fan, love him, always will, no matter what he does, who he calls, I give it 4.5 stars.
Oh, my God. That half is what...
Fantastic.
I could have accepted a 4, but you got to throw that half on the end there.
It's fantastically done. God. The car chase, the car crashes. Mel had his coolest 19 lines or sentences, whatever he says.
Yep.
I love Road Warrior.
All right. So it holds up for you.
Oh, yeah.
Not surprisingly.
Yeah, I'm shocked.
Yeah.
Does not hold up for Matt and Christy, holds up for the two of us.
Because they're stupid.
Oh,
well, yeah.
Yeah. Find 2 more co-hosts, you dick.
Wow, Christy, do you think this is a movie that only guys can like?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Well, a few of the comments we've received on our Facebook page about this, it seems like the girls have pretty much said they're going to skip it, and at least you know one of our contributors, Chris, not this Chris, but. No, the Chris, who's kind enough to post a lot of movie reviews, he was totally psyched
about
this. So.
I know he has my back.
Yeah, so
guaranteed.
Our other
Chris. Especially if you have assless chaps. Somebody better have your back.
And my front.
I know our other Chris would be right up there with our current Chris here. So if he were here, Matt and Christy would be outnumbered.
See, if you add one more letter, you get against it. So. What? Chris is for it. Chris T is against it.
Oh,
That's the one talking.
It is.
I need more.
Especially if you had to watch this again.
Oh, God, yes.
I'm watching it right now.
All right, so I guess that's the final word on the Road Warrior. And in the spirit of the Road Warrior... We're ready for our top 5 segment this week, and our top 5 list this week will include our top 5 dystopian movies, meaning anything that has to do with the end of the world by warfare, by machines, by whatever. So this left it open to more than just a post-apocalyptic kind of thing, but many of those do qualify. So Christy was very excited about making this list.
Oh, God.
Because she loves movies like this.
These are the bane of my existence. I do not watch these movies, but I was surprised when I looked around how many of the movies that I actually liked. Hmm. When I looked up the dystopian movies on Wikipedia, I was surprised of how many movies I've actually seen one and liked a lot and seen multiple times that were on this list.
I'm most interested to hear your list because we're going to get to a list at some point where all of us are going to have trouble. And I'll be interested to see what you do with it. You like science fiction. A lot of science fiction qualifies on here. So I'm anxious to hear your list. So let's hear your number 5.
Don't get too excited. I heard it.
Shut up. Number 5 would be The Matrix.
Okay.
Whoa.
I know Kung Fu.
I have to say, though, as much as you can dog Keanu Reeves' acting lack of ability, I do have to say the concept and the whole storyline really, it kept me, we actually went and bought it because it was just, it was so incredible for the time that it stood out.
And then it rushed out 2 crappy sequels.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you only mean the original Matrix, not the Matrix trilogy?
Correct.
Okay. You had that on a list before. I'm trying to...
I think the first one, I love the Matrix. The first one's fantastic.
Right.
Part 2 and 3 is, yeah, whatever.
All right. Well, Matt, let's hear yours. Number 5.
You may have to skip him because he's getting a work call right now.
Okay. Well, let's move on to Chris then. Let's hear Chris's number 5. This was your list.
Yes.
I mean, this was your... pick, so you must like movies like this. Let's hear your number five.
You know what's weird? I just found out 2 minutes ago that this my number five choice was directed by either Starchy or Hutch. I don't know which one. I don't know who he played.
We'll say the name.
Paul Michael Glasser. Is that Hutch?
Or, yeah.
Is that Hutch?
He did?
That's what it says. I just saw that right now.
Really?
Director, yeah. I never knew that until right now.
Very good.
A wrongly convicted man must try to survive a public execution gauntlet staged as a TV game show, The Running Man.
He directed that?
That's what IMDb says. Right now, that's what it says.
And it's based on a Stephen King short story, right?
I believe so,
Richard,
yeah.
As Richard Bachman, but Stephen King.
I'm a huge old fan, and The Running Man to me, I mean, it's kind of weird how today reality shows are really strong now.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is what this is about, a reality show. I don't think they'll go this extreme unless the...
I don't know.
Bachelorette does The Running Man soon or something, you know? But
it could happen.
It could happen. I love The Running Man.
That is a really good point that you're pointing out that it's reality. It's a reality show.
That's all it is. It's Survivor with Jeff Probst now, you know? It's the same shit.
But Richard Dawson.
Yeah. Hmm. I love Arnold.
Well, Matt, since you're back, what was your number five?
My number five is if we were living in this time and this actually happened, we'd all be dead because we're over 30. I picked Logan's Run.
Never seen it.
Really? Always heard about it. Never seen it.
Now, this was also a TV show, too, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes. That is true. I don't know. I think I've seen the TV show. I don't remember it as well as I do the movie, though. Hmm.
It's a cult classic.
Yep.
I bet that's true of a lot of the things that we'll have on our list. Cult classic. These fall right into that kind of frame of mind. Like, the people who love it, love it. And the people who don't have time for it, you know, this is just, like, so stupid to them.
Right.
All right. Well, let's see. My number five is really one of the movies where there is the dystopian part of it is a small part of it because it's told in either flashbacks or in a time travel capacity. And that is true of 12 Monkeys. I love 12 Monkeys. This is a pre-Tyler Durden-esque character played by Brad Pitt. Really, really great. He received an Oscar nomination. And some of the scenes in this were filmed in Philadelphia at Eastern State Penitentiary. They're standout scenes to me. I love anything Terry Gilliam does. He's got a vision that a lot of people don't have. But once you see a movie that's done by him, you know it's done by him because he just has that style. So all of my movies, words that have to come to mind to me when I think of movies like this are stark and unsettling and bleak, and I'd say 12 Monkeys certainly fits into that. So 12 Monkeys is my number five. So that means we're back to Christy and her number four.
My number four is not one that I found on the Wikipedia list, but it's one that always stayed with me for years. I think it was really my first lonely movie, other than The Wiz. it's called Night of the Comet. And it's where a comet comes and kills everybody except for Valley Girls who get stuck at the mall. And then everybody else who isn't in a lead-lined container or building becomes like flesh-eating zombies.
Why did you laugh after your choice?
It's a cult movie.
Okay.
It's not one that a lot of people have seen, and it's one that was shown repeatedly on HBO when I was a kid, so I got to see it quite a few times.
You used that before on a list too, didn't you?
Yes.
You must really love that movie.
It's not that I love it. It's just that it, for me, it left an impression. Which is the only time that I think anybody will ever say that Night of the Comet left an impression.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Matt, we'll go back in order now, and let's get your number four.
Okay, this is probably Christopher Lambert's swan song movie, even though he didn't intend it to be. It's the last thing I think I can remember ever seeing him in. I'm not going to say I saw him that he was good in it, but it was in it. It was Fortress.
Why was it his swan song?
Because he hasn't done anything since that. Well,
by choice?
No. I mean, it's not really his swan song. I think it was like an unintentional swan song because it's the last thing I've seen him in. He's done other stuff, but okay. Yeah. No, I didn't. It's not really his swan song. It's me making fun of the poor guy.
He needs a comeback or something, you know?
Okay.
When we saw your list, or at least I saw your list, and Chris saw it, we were surprised that this is the first time. Because you're a big Chris, used to be a big Chris Lambert guy.
I was, but like as more Highlanders came out, the less I really liked him because of Highlander, and then
those started to suck.
Yeah, those started to suck, and it's I guess maybe I probably took it out on him a little bit as well. You know.
All right.
Well, he's the Chris. Michael Caine of Highlander
Michael
movies.
Caine.
Is that one of your top five impressions, Chris?
I hate that guy.
All right, Chris. Well, let's hear your number four.
Number four. I don't know the actual box office numbers, but I think this probably was the worst movie in 1995. Beyond the Horizon lies the secret to a new beginning. To me, this is Road Warrior on fucking water. Water.
Oh, God. The Water Warrior.
I know. Yeah. I know people hate this movie. I love Kevin Costner. I always did. I always will. And this is Road Warrior, but it's all on water.
Well, you know what's funny? That is also my number four. So we're going to keep this going. You and I, what we have to do is we have to convince Matt that this is a good movie.
What?
Drink a lot and watch
Matt
it.
Makes Water me World? Watch it every time it's on.
I like that movie. You don't have
you
to convince
me?
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I don't think it's near as bad as the critics said it was.
I love Waterworld.
I don't love it, but I like it.
I tolerate Waterworld.
I love it. It got a bad rap.
It did.
It probably
I think
was
you're right.
It cost the most to make maybe at that time, and that's why I didn't make as much money.
Right.
And that's why it was a bomb. I don't know.
Didn't they say it was cursed?
Cursed? What, did someone die or something?
Well, no, but they kept having problems every time they'd try to shoot.
Oh, there'd be like a typhoon or something.
Yeah.
And then he ended up firing the director and I think ended up finishing it himself. But
yeah.
Kevin Reynolds is the guy that directed. His name still appears as director, but I think they think Costner finished it himself. He must be a pain in the ass to work with.
I always heard that, yeah.
Dennis Hopper's awesome in that movie.
He is awesome.
And it is Road Warrior on water. And instead of gas, it's soil. I mean...
Dry land, right? Or something?
The first half of that movie and then the ending are... freaking awesome, Matt.
What are you on to me?
Yeah, I know. You just hate Costner.
I do hate Costner.
A lot of people hate him, yeah. A lot of people don't like Kevin Costner.
Well, you and I both have that for number four, so.
Good choice, Dave.
You have a good list.
Ever once.
Speaking of good lists, well, it is Christy's turn.
Oh.
But Christy, what do you have for your number three?
Mine is actually something that was the first purchase that we made on Blu-ray. It would be District 9.
Nice. Ooh. I kind of thought that would be on Matt's list.
Well, see, I didn't consider that so much post-Olympic as whatever the hell.
Shut up.
Because it's like, outside of District 9, everything was fine. It was current day. Things were good. Life is normal. So I guess I didn't think of it that way.
I see what you mean. It was on the list that I think we all kind of used. And I think you're both right. But why did you choose it, Christy?
I actually think it's a really good story. And I think with, like you were saying, with all these dystopian movies, there's some kind of social commentary. And there's no greater social commentary than what they're doing to these aliens and just the storyline that you follow. It's not just trying to tell you, here's a story. It's, hey, here's a little bit of, look at what you're doing. This might be totally fictional, but you're doing this already.
Right. Very good. It is a social commentary, and most of these are. I think any good one is a bit of a social commentary. That means we're on to Matt and his number three.
My number three, this is just a classic movie, at least I think it is. It's the second time this movie title came up, but I think it was for an actor on my last list. But I picked Escape from New York for my number three.
Chris is happy.
Matt, that's not my number three also.
Oh, really?
I think this movie is fantastic. However, this has to be... We got to think have a list of top five worst sequels to the best movies.
Yeah, that would be a good list, actually.
Sucks. That movie blows. But this one is so awesome. You're right, man. I agree with you, man.
I never saw this.
No?
No. I saw the sequel, and you're sequel absolutely blows. Right about that.
Yeah.
It was god-awful.
Weren't there sharks in that with, like, lasers? Like, frickin' lasers on their heads?
I just remember it was, like, the worst use of Pam Grier ever.
It was the whole surfing scene. There was a big surfing scene. Oh,
I forgot about that.
Remember that part?
That's how he got to the coast of L.A., wasn't it?
Surfing?
Was it?
Yeah.
It's been a while. I don't know. But the first one is just really just dark and just an awesome, cool movie.
So what is he? He's a convict that they get out of jail that he has to get the president of New York. Is that the basic story?
I believe you're right.
I haven't seen it. I think I saw parts of it, but never actually saw it.
The president crashes in Manhattan, yeah. And they gotta have Caruso escape with him.
Okay. John Carpenter?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. Love John Carpenter.
You're a number one king of New York. A classic scene with Isaac Hayes.
Oh, that's why you brought that up. You were talking about Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're doing our top five Scientologist list. That's right.
Isaac Hayes, right. I forgot all about that. God rest his soul.
Well,
that's what he gets for trying to get fit on a treadmill. Yeah,
or whatever Scientologists do.
Get Hulu, whatever.
All right, well, let's move on here. And my number three was not Escape from New York.
Well, then I don't care to hear it.
Well, my number three was Children of Men. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but what a friggin' awesome movie.
Why does Michael Jackson keep coming up in his conversations? Oh, wait,
not Children with Men.
Oh, I'm
Children
sorry.
On Men. Children of Men. This actually got like 3 Oscar nominations. Not often these movies get Oscar noms, but the screenplay for this was amazing. About women not being able to have children. The youngest man on Earth is 18 years old. And what a bleak vision of the future, but an amazing concept. If you haven't seen it, I totally recommend it. Clive Owen, who I freaking love. Chris
you
Hayes.
Do. I'm not a big fan.
Should have been James Bond, but
here we go.
Whatever. This film also became famous for some of its shots. They go long takes with no cuts, and there's one extended take of a battle scene trying to get down an alley with no cuts in it. It's an amazing scene. So even if you're not a fan of the story, just for the filmmaking, you got to see Children of Men. So that's my number three. So that means we're back to Christy and her number two.
Number two for me is going to be the thing that's going to happen in a couple years, and I can already see it happening. Idiocracy. That movie, every time I watch it, because we had some friends buy it for us when they came to visit, and they were like, you got to see this movie. And then we finally watched it, and it was like, oh my God. And every time they show it again on Comedy Central, it's like, this is becoming less and less fiction. Less and less.
And this is Matt Judge, right?
Yeah. Mike Judge, yeah.
Mike Judge, sorry.
Yeah. Just always reminds me of that song, Only Stupid People Are Breeding, that line from the...
That
song.
Ooh, yeah.
Flagpole set up.
Thank you, yes. Every danger, yeah.
Very good. All right. Chris, I can assume you don't have this on your list.
You know, it's weird as isn't that with Wilson?
Luke Wilson? Yeah.
Yeah.
Expert.
I remember watching that. I did see that.
Mm-hmm. You saw it in theaters?
No. I think it was on some cable channel and I watched it.
Did not do well in theaters.
I forget. I mean, all of it. Yeah. Mostly, yeah. But I remember that.
Well, you like Dax Shepard.
Yeah, I do.
That's why you saw it.
I do. Parenthood. NBC.
I was waiting for it. I was like,
I didn't like Dax Shepard until I saw Parenthood, so.
He was, on Punk? Was he on Punk?
That's where I first saw him. Yeah. He was one of the dudes on Punk.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
And he went from, like, that show, which is a crazy ass, to Parenthood. He's, like, fucking awesome on that show. Love him.
To getting ready to marry Veronica Mars.
Yeah.
Mm. Really?
Yep. Yeah, he's engaged to her.
Yeah.
Asshole.
That's right, yeah.
I concur.
Well, Matt, what's your number two?
My number two is, was your number five or number four? I forget which one, but I have 12 Monkeys on my list as well.
Awesome.
That's one of those movies I probably saw it with you guys. It's probably a midnight showing. You know, didn't really have any expectations of it because didn't quite know what it was going to be about and ended up really liking it.
Awesome. I'm surprised it's not on your list, Chris.
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, I knew you had on your list.
You love Bruce.
I do. I love Brad Pitt, too. And, you know.
Isn't Sting have a cameo in this, too? Isn't he like a soldier that falls across the camera?
He's in Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Yeah, I know, but I think he's...
No.
I thought he had a cameo in this, too. Because him and Terry Gilliam like really good friends or something?
They may be, but I don't remember him.
Ah, okay. Now I got to look it up.
I'll have to look that up. If you know that and I don't, I should be ashamed. But, yeah, great movie. Especially the Philadelphia scenes. That make you homesick, Matt, seeing the Philadelphia scenes?
Yeah, especially when the lions roam in the streets. That really drives it home.
But anybody that's been to Eastern State Penitentiary has seen those places, and it looks exactly like that. I mean, what an amazing place to shoot a movie.
Why would one be in Eastern Pennsylvania State Penitentiary?
Sex.
Well, now it's like a historical. You know,
okay, because I thought it was still operating. In which case, yeah.
No, it's shut down for years. But and at Halloween they make it into a huge haunted house. But the rest of the year you can tour it. You got to wear a hard hat because the place is falling apart.
Oh wow!
Awesome place. I know panelist Tim is a big fan of Eastern State Penitentiary. He may have been a patient at some point.
I was gonna say, talking about being homesick.
All right, Chris, how about you and your number two?
Number two is my second Arnold pick on my top five.
Mm-hmm.
I'm picking the first one because I like that one a lot. The first Terminator. I just think it's weird how it shows you what it's going to be like, but then you have to go back in time to kind of change the past. But I love the first movie. Love Terminator.
Yeah, Arnold. Arnold will probably be on all of your lists, no matter what.
Yes. Best buddy comedy, Twins.
Junior.
Junior. Yeah, that
oh, God.
That was bad. But I love this one. I love the first Terminator. I think I love him as a badass. And this is probably what made me like him, as this first movie.
The very first Terminator.
Yeah.
Well, I know that's shown up on a list before, too. That's probably yours.
Probably was.
You're so predictable.
And that's why I emailed you. Here's my predictable top five list. I did.
You did.
Star Wars because of the Tatooine scenes. That was very desolate.
That's number one.
All right. Well, my number two is probably the most recent movie, at least it seems, on any of our lists. Came out last year, and it is The Book of Eli.
That was good.
Anything Denzel Washington, I'd just say, holy crap.
Yes.
How can it be bad? Because he can just do anything.
What
he
about the train movie. Movie that just came out?
Good.
Good.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Yep. Good. He can do anything.
He can.
And this isn't the kind of movie that you expect an Oscar winner to be in, but I was kind of surprised when I saw him in it, but it's so great. Gary Oldman, you know, even holier crap. Like everything he's in, he's just great. Another bleakest of the bleakest visions of the future. And since it's relatively new, I'm not going to say too much else about this. There is a twist to this movie that I consider myself a somewhat astute moviegoer. I totally did not see.
I'm right with you. I had no idea.
So really great movie, really, really great concept, and another really great social commentary. So I'm not going to say too much other than this, except if you have not seen it, don't even rent it. Just go buy it. If you like this kind of movie, there's no way you don't like this. What an awesome.
It was great. It was fantastic.
All right. So we are on then to our number ones. Christy, I'm anxious to hear your number one dystopian movie.
Well, I was very surprised to see this movie on the list of dystopia. I never think of it as dystopian, but I mean, I've actually revisited the series, and just the thought of a major world conflict coming that involves two great superpowers, China and the United States, and the whole universe has to meld around those two, and they speak Chinese and English.
Balls of Fury.
Huh?
Balls of Fury. The ping pong movie.
Yes. No, it would be Serenity. Okay. Love Firefly. Love that entire series. And never thought of it as dystopian, but I think it's because the characters, when you watch it on TV, it doesn't bother you so much because it's such a small atmosphere. When I watch it in movies, it does kind of bother me. But I grew to love and know the characters so well over those few episodes that it really didn't bother me in the movie form, and it is one of my favorite movies.
All right, excellent. That means we're on to Matt and his number one.
Oh, Christy already stole my thunder with her number two because I had Idiocracy as number one.
Done.
I always said I love it when you guys have the same movies on your list. It's so cute.
Isn't that sweet?
Just a freaking adorable.
Welcome to Costco.
Chris and both had the same movie. It was a cute too.
Was. Come here.
All right. So, Chris, that means we're on to you. And you are number one. What's your all-time number one dystopian movie?
We're going to be faster than the Mats.
Why is that?
Ruthless, Savage, Spectacular, this podcast, Road Warrior. Your turn, Dave.
Now, most of us have not put the movie that we're discussing on our list, but you couldn't resist.
It's mostly because it's Mel Gibson. He's like one. He's probably my favorite actor of all time.
Okay.
I love Road Warrior.
You do, and that's why you picked it, even though you didn't own a copy.
Well, I was going to pick a holiday movie, but time passed the holidays. I chose this one.
So the only logical alternative is this.
Sure, one of my favorites.
All right. Well, that means this was our last one, and I chose another somewhat recent movie, and the movie I chose is I Am Legend. I saw it when it came out, just like most people, and it's one of those things that instantly became one of my all-time favorite movies and one of my all-time favorite performances from a guy that I always was kind of underwhelmed by, but not in this movie. Some of his interactions with the dog and with the mannequins, especially Frank, who he has this whole relationship with. Will Smith really, really, I think, shines in this. The way they made the solitary feeling of New York City, it was just like in 28 Days Later they did with London. What an amazing job they did. The way they used an empty New York City as a character almost in the movie was great. This movie's more entertaining to me than some of these other movies. But it seems like all of my movies are from the 90s, which is kind of weird. Except for, I mean, at least from the 90s on. So, but my number one is I Am Legend. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. So, very good. We had a lot of differences. But what was the same? Escape from New York, Waterworld, and Idiocracy.
Yeah.
Yep.
And yep. Christy survived.
Yes, I did. It was unpleasant, but I did.
And to go back to that Vernon Wells story.
Oh, okay.
I forgot
all about that.
Me and Tim went to a convention and have his autograph, and I remember saying to him, do you know there's a scene where you hop up on the truck and that you can see your balls? And he just stood there and just... I asked him what he said, and Tim forgets, and I forget. But he just shook his head.
Like he was angry?
No, but like he's heard that before.
Okay.
Saw his balls.
And I told Congratulations, him. Chris.
Yeah, it was nice.
And you said you tried to see them on...
I forgot all about it when I was watching it. I forgot which part it was, but I did see his balls, and I told him about it.
You said you usually pause it.
I do pause it.
What does that say about you?
I have a good TV.
That's what it says about you?
It does.
Okay.
So that was the story we had before?
Yes, saw his balls, and I told him. How many people have you saw the balls and told them? Huh?
You got a point there.
You got me.
Exactly.
And any other stories you'd like to add?
Not right now.
You could have told that when you said that Road Warrior was your number one movie.
I love balls.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Remember, this is the podcast about the Gradys, not the "Hey, let's not be surprised by what Chris says" podcast.
That's right.
I think they're one and the same.
That's right.
That'd be a long fucking podcast.
Well, I would like to thank you for listening to The Gradys, the Great 80s Movie Debate. Please visit our website at gradys.neozaz.com and check out some of our earlier podcasts like Dirty Dancing, Summer School, Footloose, The Neverending Story. It's all free. Download it on iTunes from our website or from blueberry.com. That's blubrry.com/Gradys. Lots of ways to hear our show. And if you have done that on iTunes, leave us a review and let other people know what you think, and get the word out there about the Gradys. We appreciate all of our listeners who listen every week, and you can subscribe on iTunes, so go ahead and do that if you like what you hear. You can get in contact with us a couple of ways. One of them is on our Facebook page. Just search Gradys and participate in our online on Facebook, on our little posts and all the little things we do. It's just a lot of fun stuff, so get on there if you can. And you can also contact us on Google Voice at 215-804-9082. Don't forget to check out neozaz.com for other great podcasts like the Trailer Pod Boys, which is all about the Canadian television show The Trailer Park Boys. So go on there and check that out as well. Now, last week was a panelist pick. Chris was our panelist who did pick.
Wait till the next one.
Why? Because it's Christy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're looking forward to that?
Yes.
You lie like a dog.
Well, in between Chris and Christy's pick, we will actually have our grandomizer, our Gradys randomizer, randomly select our next movie. So Chris will select one. Matt will select one.
You got it punched up, maybe?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Between the two selections, we will let Christy choose the next movie that we will review. So it appears that Chris is ready and has a film.
I do.
Oh.
And I hear groans coming from podcast.
I'm just going to say this now. I prefer the panelist pick more than the randomizers. That's just how I feel, though.
That's just how you
I'm
feel.
I'm putting it out there.
Well, you're happy about this.
This one's, yes. This one's good.
So you would have never picked this. No one would ever pick this, but you love this.
I do.
All right. Well, would you like to give them the tagline to see if they can guess what it is?
Yeah, I'll give you the year. In 1984 came out. Shocking, shameless, sinful, wicked. And the party hasn't even started.
Witches of Eastwick?
What?
No.
What?
That would never say that was Chris. One of Chris's favorite
Yentl?
Movies.
Yentl? No, yeah.
Yentl?
Bachelor Party?
Yo, yes, oh, Matt, go. Got it.
Matt gets a panelist, most valuable panelist for that.
Woohoo. Well, Chris doesn't get it.
I never get it.
No.
No.
That's their tagline.
Okay, the man, the music, the madness, the murder, the motion picture.
A lot of M's there.
Yep.
The man, the music, the madness, the murder.
Yep. The motion picture.
Murder?
It's playing in the background.
Sound effects from, from the road work.
Bomb explosions. What year, Matt?
I don't know. I have to look that up quick.
It's not a comedy, is it? It's,
no. Yeah. No.
Murder.
I'm drawing a blank. At the beginning, I thought maybe it was like a concert film, like Moonwalker or...
Oh, God, no.
Or Bring on the Night. The Sting concert film. I'm going to make you guys watch that. But
it is 1984.
Ooh, same year, Best Party, same year.
I have no idea.
Me neither.
I give up on this
Okay,
one.
Let me see if I can give you some stars here.
Ooh.
The two stars should give it away. F. Murray Abraham and Tom Hulce.
Oh, no.
That would be so awesome.
No, I'm saying that
now.
If they sang that during the damn movie, it would be an exciting movie.
Falco.
Tomato, awesome. Tomato.
He's not a luck dragon.
He gives a shit.
Amadeus?
The guy's dead.
Oh, yep. I love Amadeus.
No, I'll be out that week. I have a phone call. I got a phone call that night.
That would be very hard to review.
I kind of have to agree.
That'd be very hard to watch. It's eight hours long, isn't it?
It's very long. I have to say, I like this idea of bachelor party.
Yay!
Chris is happy.
I am happy. Yeah, I haven't seen a movie in a while, though.
You love bachelor party.
I do.
You love Adrian's med.
I do.
Yeah.
What's that? I don't know. What's this? Throwing a blank. I love it.
When's the last time you saw it?
It's been a while. It's been a long, long time.
Okay. Well, in that case, please join us on the next episode of The Greaties, the Great 80s Movie Debate, when we will be discussing 1984's Bachelor Party. We leave you now with the immortal words of Mr. Mel Gibson, who said,
2 days ago, I saw a vehicle that had hauled that tanker. You want to get out of here? You talk to me. You make me want to smoke.
Chris, you have a tear?
I do.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That was good.
Yeah, that did go pretty good, didn't it?
It really did.